Nation, hello, good morning, good evening, whatever the fuck this is to you. Thank you, listeners, for listening. This is Tony Gatone with episode 3 of the Nihilist Brunch, coming right at you here, right on time for after Valentine's Day. Yeah, everybody have a good Valentine's Day. Somebody send you a letter with some expressive desires and emotions pertaining to love and affection. Not me. Valentine's Day for me is that's the day of the year that I get really drunk and really stoned and don't talk to or go hang out with any of my friends or anyone, and I just sort of sit alone and find new ways every year to be bitter like a fucking IPA. But you know what's not bitter? This Guinness extra stout that I'm about to drink at 9 in the morning. That should tell you how I feel about Valentine's Day and sort of how my Valentine's Day routine is I'm on late getter upper, and here I am at 9 a.m. already cracking a beer just so that I can be thoroughly sloshed by the time anyone tries to have any sort of meaningful interaction with me. I want to be thoroughly useless. I want to be like an appendix. Tastes delicious. Tastes like the fucking tastes like the butthole of Velma. Yeah. So, this has been a very very bittersweet sort of week for me. Worked a lot. I got myself a couple new things. Recently, I got a little bit of extra cash thrown at me at work, a little bit of raise, which was pretty nice. I didn't ask for it. I got my check one day, and I'm like, yo, I know maybe I worked a little bit of extra hours, but is that really accounting for this? But, yeah. Leave it to my current job and my current boss, who's my kitchen buddy, to finally reaffirm my my ultimate goal that I had. When I get a job, this really only pertains to in the kitchen when I'm cooking, because that's where I shine. When I get a job, I don't like to have to ask or demand for a raise. The way I dreamed of it, I was starting to think that maybe I was naive, and this was just isn't the kind of thing that ever happens, and you have to ask or demand for a raise. But I always dreamt of working really hard and having good attendance and just really showing the boss and showing the rest of the staff there that they can rely on me, and that I can handle things and I can run things, and things will be smooth. And I've always just wanted to be offered or given a raise from the boss or the manager's own free will, without having to be prompted to do that, based on my own merits. And I worked at YP, fuck that place, for almost 2 years, and she didn't give me a raise, and then she denied me that when I asked late in the game. But I think there they thought they threw me a bone by paying me more out the gate. But anyway, oh jeez, I don't fucking chafing like a motherfucker. But yeah, really weird dream. Really, really weird dream last night. It's really, really just this weird, a weird sequence of fucking of things in this dream. So I was really hungry, and I was walking along this highway, but somehow I was walking the same speed as traffic. Like, I don't know why. I don't know how this was, but, like, I was walking along the side of the highway, and, like, I just remember, like, people slowly coming past me, and then, like, not getting too far ahead, and then, like, and then me, like, almost passing them, and, like, I don't know, it was just really weird. Like, I stayed with the flow of traffic, but we were on, like, a highway, and every car was going, like, you know, however fast you fucking go on that highway. And I was walking, and, but I was going the same speed as the cars. I don't know. That's, like, really the least, that's, like, the lowest and most easily, like, digestible part of this dream. But I'm walking along the highway, at the same speed as vehicle traffic, looking for some place to eat. And then I see a sign, you know, one of those signs that tells you what all's coming at the next exit. Gas, and burgers and shit. So I go into this Turkey Hill, hungry as fuck, trying to get some of that hot and ready food, you know, one of them tornadoes or you know, some kind of shit like that. And I walk in, and, like, the whole store is just, like, bare. No, nothing is stocked. There is no like merchandise, like wrapped merchandise that they would have ordered to buy. Like, all there aren't even any shelves in this Turkey Hill. Like, I walk into this Turkey Hill, there are no shelves, and it's just a bunch of hot and ready machines, like different kinds of hot and ready machines, like types of shit I didn't even know fucking existed. Like, this one was like a giant corkscrew that, like, looked like it was red hot, that I'm assuming that you make, like, kebabs or fucking s'mores on, or fucking, I don't know. But just a bunch of, like, weird different hot and ready, made to order type equipment spread strategically all about this Turkey Hill, with no shelves or products, and all of the hot and ready stuff is empty, and there's no food or anything. It's literally just an empty ass store with no type of sustenance available for purchase at all. But the only thing that they did have was in the center of the store, there was, like, a small, like, gift card rack sized shelf with this book on it, this hardback book, and there was the same kind of rack, two of them by the register, with the same book, hardback and paperback edition, all different sizes, and the book was called The Turkey of the Hill, and it had a picture on it of a turkey on a hill, and it said in like very ornate and very ornate cursive lettering, The Turkey of the Hill. I'm assuming that's where, I'm assuming this is the legend that spawned the franchise. But, like, so I'm at Turkey Hill, and all there is to buy is this book, The Turkey of the Hill. And, like, I'm fucking pissed off. I'm like, yo, don't you have any hot and ready food or any kind of food I can buy? And then the lady at the restaurant is like, no, we don't. But we do have a book called The Turkey of the Hill. If you would like for $17.99, I signed for you. I'm the offer. And I guess she's the fucking author. And, like, dude, I lost my shit, dude. Like, I don't know what happened. Like, I just snapped and I dove over the counter and strangled her. And I strangled her so hard. I was, like, squeezing her neck so hard that, like, my fingers poked through her neck and, like, left 8 puncture marks on either side of her neck and just started squirting out blood everywhere. And, like, I was like, oh shit. And, like, so I ran out of the store, and, like, I looked to my left, and all I see is, like, this really big hill with a sunset. and the sun is sort of just coming up over the hill, and then there's just this turkey on the hill being illuminated by the sunset, looking down at me with these eyes of contempt, as if like, how could I deny the turkey of the hill? So I just fucking left that place, ran away, ran across the street, back onto the highway, still walking the same speed as the traffic. And then I see this Burger King, and I'm like, yes, finally, a place that doesn't sell books, that only sells food. So I walk up to this Burger King, but there's a peculiar thing about it. A peculiar thing about this Burger King is before you can get, there's only one entrance, okay? There's no side door, back door. There's only one entrance, and that's the front door. Other than like a back door that like employees would use, that I think was like, I didn't try that. But there was the front door, and in front of the front door was like an in-ground pool, like a big in-ground pool, and you had to like, the pool was blocking the path to the front door. You couldn't just walk up to the front door. Like, there was this pool there, and then there was a mannequin with a tuxedo, a mannequin with like a suit or some kind of like, you know, formal suit type clothing, like, you know, a button up or a jacket and suit pants and these loafers. And there was a big sign, a big digital sign that just slowly had these words scrolling, said, put on the suit, swim across the pool. And so that's what I did. I put on the suit and then I swam across the pool. I swam across the moat. I swam across the Burger King's moat to get to the entrance of the castle, the restaurant, whatever the fuck this is. And then I get inside and there's nobody there except for a bunch of celery sticks and cauliflowers and just like really just raw vegetables that are human sized, that don't have any arms and legs but are still going through motions like they're walking around, and just like they're walking around going about their fucking business the way a human would, but they have no arms and legs or faces. It's just like giant vegetables like moving around. It was just really peculiar, sitting at tables and shit. So right away I'm just like, yo, fuck that cauliflower. I don't like his story. Fuck that cauliflower. Yo, he looks run down, he looks old, he looks sketchy. Looks like the kind of guy who would buy a house and then just like turn it into like a homeless pedophilia house. Like I don't even know where I got that description, but this cauliflower just like, I don't know. It was at this point in the dream when I locked eyes. Well, I don't know. My eyes looked at the stalk, which sort of felt to me to be like its eyes or its whatever. I was looking into this cauliflower's soul, and like I felt this sense of dread, this overwhelming sense that there was a lot wrong here, and that this is the vehicle for all of that disgust that had happened in this place. So I real quick turn around and like try to just and turn my back to that cauliflower and go to order my food from the only other person in the building that's not a raw vegetable. And I try to order some food, and he says, the only thing we have is fried chicken. And I'm like, well, dude, get it. And so I fucking ate all this fried chicken and shit. Actually, I didn't eat it. I dove over the counter and like reached into the hot container where the chickens were sitting in the heat in the heat booth, and just started like shoveling in my mouth, and that's when I woke up. And I'll just never forget the turkey of the hill. Like, wow, so profound, such depth. Like, it's only once in a lifetime that you could even come to experience such a complex and wide-reaching book as The Turkey of the Hill. And so yeah, now I need to write a letter to Turkey Hill and ask them if they will publish my book, The Turkey of the Hill, which I am going to start writing now, inspired by my sporadic, scatterbrained dream. But yeah, it's been real. It's been real snowy, real icy, and stuff lately around these parts. It's that time of year. Yeet yeet, ha ha. But yeah. But yeah, the weather is definitely wilding out right now. It's about I guess it's that time of year. Like, I just remember not even like 10 years ago when I was like a teenager in high school, majority of the snow, or at least the first snow and a good bit of snow, came in November, December. And we always had a white Christmas. And now it's like we have like, you know, 65% cold as fuck cold days, and then like 35% either not that cold or downright almost fucking warm days just strewn about for what used to be the first half of winter all the way up until like mid-January, and then like from mid-January on to like March we get our couple snows and it's like frigid every day, and then it warms up. And it's like just this cycle of winter in Pennsylvania is very different than what it used to be. And I'm saying that as somebody who's lived here the whole time. And like, so, to me, if you're a climate change denier, then the only reason that you can hold that position is one of two reasons you can hold that position. One, you're stupid. Not in the control of all your faculties, the brain that functioned not so well. Or two, if you're not an idiot and you still think climate change isn't real, it's because you haven't lived long enough, or maybe you have brain damage and you can't recall most of your life. But if you have lived at least, let's say I'm 25, I'm 26 years old. I'm 26 years old. So if you've lived at least 26 years and can actually like accurately recall memories of the seasons for most of your life, then you should be able to clearly see changes occurring year to year. Like, I remember the blizzard of 2014, like, November, walking, like, not even, like, half a mile to get laid from trailer park to trailer park. And, dude, that walk, half a mile walk took me, like, an hour, because I was literally, I was on 272. I was on 272 heading north to Lancaster, but I was way down in Quarryville, and I was walking from Quarryville up 272 to a trailer park, like half a mile. And 272 is a highway. That's like one of the main roads leading out of Quarryville. So, very populated road. And shit you not, like, this is at, like, 11 p.m. or so. Like, there's 3 feet of snow across the entire road. Snow drifts going. Wind. There's no one there. No lights. There's just... I can't even, like, see... There have been no cars on the road for hours before that. Nobody was out. It looked like a barren and empty tundra. But it was, like, my hometown. It was just really creepy. And on the way back, I remember running into this one other guy walking. He was walking the way I came when I was on my way back. And it was just really weird seeing him. And I was like, hey, what's up? And he looks at me. And he's, like, this really weird guy. Like, the only way I can describe the way he looked, like, the best way to describe it is, like, if you've ever seen the movie Tenacious D and The Pick of Destiny, there's that that really old... The old and crippled and homeless guy who wanted to kill Jack Black and Kyle Gass. And he's like, he pulls out a knife. He's like, oh, I'm going to cut you. Oh, yeah, I'm going to cut you real good. You just stay right there. I'm a little slow. You just stay right there and you don't move. I'm coming over there to cut you. And he's just like, no. I'm not staying here. I'm leaving. I'm not staying still. He said, you better stay still so I can come get you. And, like, yeah, that old guy that from that scene in Tenacious D, Pick of Destiny, this is what that guy looked like. And I was like, hey, what's up? What are you walking for? Either you got kicked out or you're trying to get laid. And he just looked at me and he was like, The phases of the moon are more influential during times of human inactivity. And then he just continued to look, and he just stopped walking like he expected me to stand there and look with him, but I would just freak the fuck out because there was nobody else around, and, like, nobody would have been able to hear my scream, so I got the hell out of there. But, Ciao. It's been a busy, it's been a very busy couple of days for me, running around at work, trying to get things straight at home, trying to, disregard Valentine's Day and all of its little traditions. Sha la la, dooby wah, rum bum bum, hip hip bum. Sha la la, dooby wah, rum bum bum, hip hip bum. Yeah, that's literally a whole ass fucking chorus. My mom listens to that kind of shit. That, like, I don't even know what era it is. Either it sounds like 60s, the style, but the production quality sounds like 80s. But Roy Orbison, that kind of, like, weird doo-wop, stoobie-wah kind of music where any given moment, dude might just fucking pull out a whole chorus of onomatopoeia fucking, you know what I'm saying? Only the lonely dum 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 dum. Know the heartache I've been through. Oh, yeah. Only the lonely. Or that one song with the pretty woman walking down the street. That's his most famous one. But, I don't know why that got in my head. I think that some of those choruses are fucking ridiculous. Sha la la, doobie wah. Rom pom pom, heep heep bum. It's fucking so relatable. It's so relatable. At least it is to me. Relatable as fuck. Just like diarrhea. I get diarrhea a good bit, and indigestion and stuff. And I take Pepto-Bismol for that. The drink. I take Pepto-Bismol, and like that shit is fucking delicious. Like it's to the point like I love the taste so much that when I do get indigestion or an upset stomach, I get excited and giddy, giddy because I get to go get Pepto-Bismol and drink it without looking like a creepy weird sideshow freak who drinks fucking Pepto-Bismol for deliciousness. It's like an excuse, like, oh, I get to drink some Pepto. I have a stomach ache. Don't worry about it. But like, I seriously like have a problem. Like, I could be on My Strange Addiction for that shit. Like, when I end up going to get Pepto-Bismol, I'll get it and I'll drink it for a day or two on, you know, how I need it. And I'll drink it for a day or two, and then my stomach ache is gone the next day. And like, I'll just be like getting dressed, you know, brushing my teeth, walking, and I'll walk past my nightstand, and I'll just like, I'll just look over and like quickly, you know, gaze past the Pepto. I'm like, oh, Pepto. And I'll just like, you know, take three swigs. And that happens like twice a day. Every time I walk past the Pepto, I gotta like take a quick swig. I'm like, ooh, Pepto. Cause the shit tastes like goddamn fucking success and fucking riches and bubblegum and pussy. I love the stuff. I really do. Like, if I can make a Pepto-Bismol flavored milkshake that wasn't really Pepto-Bismol, so that I could like drink it safely, I would be all on that shit, bro. Like, now I'm just thinking about Pepto-Bismol, and like, I can just feel the thick, pink, goopy liquid sifting down my tongue, approaching the esophagus. All right, enough being creepy. But in all honesty, I really do love Pepto-Bismol. Like, I'm not going to say I'm addicted to it, because once I like get a stomach ache or diarrhea and I go get Pepto-Bismol, and then it goes away, I don't go out and get more so that I can keep drinking Pepto. Like, you know, I got some, and I'll just slowly, well, not really that slowly, I'll just steadily kill that Pepto that I bought until it's gone, which happens really fast every time I walk past it and lock eyes with it. And then I'm like, oh, well, you know what, I should probably just call this a game and not go get some more Pepto. And then I just, you know, I don't get any more until I'm sick again. And then it is kind of expensive, because you would think that Pepto-Bismol could last you a while, and you could, like, you know, the next four or five times you get indigestion or diarrhea, you could use the Pepto-Bismol. But it's more expensive for me, because I buy Pepto-Bismol once for that diarrhea, and then by the time I have the need to use it again because of my body, it's already gone. Because it's like crack to me. It's like crack. And who the fuck doesn't like crack? I'll tell you who. Meth heads. Because meth heads know. They know that crack is a waste of their goddamn time. Who wants to spend $60 to chase a feeling, not get it, and then you spend that $60, chase the feeling, smoke it all within 15 minutes, and then within a grand total of 20 minutes, you're sober and fiending again. Like, yeah. No, I'm from the country. Us white folk, we do crystal meth. Actually, I have a theory about that. Like, my theory is that my addiction to meth was kind of a... It was my destiny at birth, you see. Being born black, being born half black the way I was, it's just in my genes, it's in my DNA. It is going to happen. It is in my, it's in the genetic coding all the way down to the DNA for me, for every black guy, that you just instinctually want to smoke crack. And that's just the inner nigga. Like, since the 1980s, every black person that was born has this innate instinct within them, in their DNA, that if activated, will instinctually and impulsively, thoughtlessly smoke crack. And that's just natural. This is natural African-American genes. But I'm also half white, and I grew up and raised in rural Pennsylvania by white folk, surrounded by white folk. So those innate crack smoking nigger genes that I have were corrupted and corrupted and transmutated into the tweaked out, half a brain, chewing my teeth off, picking holes in my hair meth addiction that it grew into. So yeah, I explained that to my counselor before, and she really appreciated the effort to make light of such a serious thing, and while also attempting to stab and offend at different groups of people. I try. And like, this shit scares me, because throughout my life, I've been around a lot of different old heads who have been doing fucking meth for decades now, and just steady. So I'm getting like a sneak peek, like an up close personal experience of what's to come for me should I continue to pursue that habit. And like, it's very scary, and very it's a good deterrent, because you have all these fucking old heads who are just completely brain dead. Like, it's not like heroin, where like, I've lost so many friends to heroin. Like, lost my best friend, brother, to heroin 3 years ago. And it's not like that, where it's like, you know, at any moment your suffering could be abruptly ended by a bad batch. Like, it's just, it's not usually how it works. How it works is, it consumes you, and it kills your ability to feel happiness and accomplishment and success and satisfaction. It just desensitizes your brain through massive overstimulation, and also leaves you fucking brain dead slowly, and like, to the point where you end up like some of these people, old heads that I know, where like, they don't know how to do anything. They literally don't know how to do anything except for procure and use meth, and they don't even do that well anymore. It's like I'll be standing there, and he'll just be like picking through the carpet, and it's like, dude, like, there's nothing in the carpet. And he's like, dude, no, man, I'm fucking digging for fairies, man. There's fairies in here, dude. It's like a whole other universe down there, man. Like, alright, I'm gonna let you guys in on this little story. I was fucking lit. And let me preface this story by telling you that sleep deprivation is one hell of a drug. There's nothing stronger than that. Being deprived of sleep. And like, I don't know how long I was awake. Probably like a week or so at this point. And I was in my cul-de-sac outside my house. In my car, I had my Oldsmobile at the time, which was really dirty, and it was daytime out, like in the morning. And I started this venture. I remember the purpose, the reason I was sifting through the upholstery, the floor of my car, was to find little stray pieces of crystal, because I was a fiend, and that's what fiends do. It's one thing that crackheads and meth heads share. We sift through the carpet to find little pieces of prizes left behind, like a scavenger hunt, like Easter eggs. It's like Easter eggs, you know. This is Moses's idea. Moses said in Luke John 43:7, suck a cock, smoke meth, find it in the ground. But no. So I was looking through the ground, trying to find little pieces of crystal. And somewhere along the line, I don't know how or when exactly this happened, but at some point in doing this, I ceased looking for little shards in the carpet, and I began a 5-hour process of like picking up and organizing and painstakingly organizing little pieces of like pebbles and dirt and dust bunnies and paper and twigs and stick, and basically just like a whole slew, a diverse cornucopia of useless debris that is trash from my floor, and began like organizing it from like organizing it by how much it was gonna sell at auction from like greatest to least. Like, for real, dude. Like, I thought that I was having an auction, that I was gonna have very high roller rich people at this auction ready to spend. So I had to like find and categorize my product. So I'm like, this twig's gonna be 15,000. I can definitely get 8,000 at least for this pebble. That dust bunny is authentic. I can get like 30,000 for that dust bunny. And so yeah, I was like basically organizing the debris on the in my car on the floor of my car to sell at auction, and the whole time thinking like, I'm rich, dude. I'm gonna make a killing, dude. Like, I can stop. I don't have to work anymore. My mom doesn't have to work anymore. I can buy the house, and and all because I was gonna make millions at this fucking floor debris auction. And then somewhere along the line, I just like after like hours and hours of doing this, I just stopped and I was like, yo. I just ran through in my head. I was like, what is it that I think that I'm doing right now? And I just ran through that. And I was like, oh shit. I need to go to bed. And so, too bad I went. That was years ago. That was years ago. Things have changed for me. Things have changed for me. Yeah. It's been a long, hard road. It's not like my dick. My dick is a short, sad, soft fucking organ, if you want to even like it barely makes the cut. It barely makes the cut. And I blame the Jews. You already know this. Where's my fucking foreskins? But hey, we're about 38 minutes in. I'm gonna take a short break and go see what the deal is with my butthole, if I can somehow, manifest an orgasm from that. But yeah, I will be right back in a flash. Hey, and I am back here. Had my little break. Sorry it took me so long. I fucking got pulled over again by the fucking pigs and got another possible DUI. Like, dude, they're sitting everywhere these days, I swear. Like, I was literally just coming out of my bathroom and going towards the fridge. And so, whoop, 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 whoop. Say, shit. Made me fucking blow the breathalyzer and fucking blow the blow, and not in the fun way. Fucking blew a like a 2.14, I think. Which, when you think about it, it's almost close. It's close to pi. Okay, so Mr. Zechman, my 10th grade geometry teacher, at least you can find some solace, some closure in the nearness of my and blood alcohol content to your magical pie. The only fucking pie I like is the American pie that I be sticking my dick in. Yee hee 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 hee. Yee hee. Oh boy. I need to go to a concert, y'all. Like, I'm craving that fucking mosh pit, crowd surf, screaming aggressive things in my ear, bass pounded in my chest, fucking double bass in your face. Yeah, that's what I fucking need right now. I think that's what we all need. We all need to just be able to get back to that recreational thing we used to do socially. You know, it's been a rough time for us all. And I try to empathize with serial killers because I find it entertaining to I'm a human, I'm a person, we all are, and we have we have this imagination that has a lot of potential. You know what I mean? I can live a lot of lives without having to live them. So, how I manage to keep my cool and live my life so that most nobody ever sees me get visibly angry? Well, I do a little thing called take a trip into my imagination and serial kill all the people that minorly inconvenience me during the day. It could just be in passing. It could just be your breath stinks and I smelled it. So now you get serial killed. I'm like the blueberry, but with an actual KKK cloth. I'm the black white supremacist Dave Chappelle. Me. You fake as shit, nigga. What's up? What's up? Come get some, Dave Chappelle. What's up? What's up? My butthole's clean, waiting for you, You know, if I could suck my own butthole, beyond a shadow of a doubt, I would have a prolapsed anus. And that's just, I would just have to accept that's the way that life is gonna be lived, if I could suck my own ass. So, from one point of view, I guess you could say I'm lucky I can't suck my own ass, but man, whew. Man, do I want a Tootsie Pop. Oh, boy. So, people, what do you think? What do you think of the podcast? I know I have these, these sporadic ideas for content that I always do. Like, whatever happened to your beer reviews? Whatever happened to Epic Brew reviews? Well, you know what? I am in the process of trying to upgrade my equipment that I have available to do these things with, okay? So, expect to see some stuff real soon, okay? Expect to see some stuff real soon. Just be patient. Be patient with me, okay? I've been trying to figure out how is gonna be the best way for me to have guests on my beer review show so I can, have them, because I know y'all get tired of looking at my ugly face. That's for show. For showdy show, show. Knock, knock. Who's there? That wasn't a knock. That was the Mayans. They don't fucking knock. Fucking sacrifice your goddamn whole entire ball sack and scrotum. Like, you think the Jews were bad, just you know, nipping off your foreskins, fucking cutting off a supply of dick cheese. No. I'd be taking the whole ball, the whole sack, making a slingshot, shooting peanuts at your mom. Taking your scrotum, shooting fucking literal peanuts at your little brother who's got a peanut allergy. Swell up in hives now, little one. Swell up in hives now. Now you look like a real saltine cracker.
You ever get really stoned? You know, you just smoke a blunt, right? And you eat like, and you just have like this really, really off the charts fucking cotton mouth. Like, your mouth is so dry that it takes It takes focus and like manpower for you to actually move your tongue in your mouth, because it just is like scraping like sand against the roof of your mouth. That's how fucking dry it is. Like, that's how starved your mouth is for moisture. It's like it's like the houseplants from an overactive millennial housewife who thinks she wants to have houseplants but instead can't get off TikTok, so her houseplants haven't ever had water. That's how your mouth is after this smoke session, okay? And then you go into the cabinet, like, hungry, you know? Need something to revitalize this whole dry mouth situation here. So you reach in there, and the only thing you have is a box of stale crackers that are so old, they aren't crispy anymore. And essentially, they are a protein shake with no liquid, but still kind of crunchy. And that's what you eat on top of your Sahara Desert cotton mouth. Now you got a good sense of that feeling of what I'm talking about. Just really take a minute there and meditate on that. Just try and really come into contact with that idea, that feeling of unimaginable dry mouth mixed with stale, uncrispy powder cracker. Yeah. You got that feeling? You got that feeling where it's like you don't even know if this is a mouth? You can't even conceive of taste buds anymore? That feeling, that is what I'm calling you white folks when I say cracker. So keep that in mind. That way you can sort of connect with your slur. Because Lord knows I've had a great time connecting to my slur. Yeah. I know that I'm so good at connecting to my slur that I can connect to an individual's personal interpretation of that slur. Someone can call me nigger, and you know, one person call me nigger, and I'll know that means when he says nigger, he means the fucking dead weight on the opposite end of the chain that he's dragging. I just know that. I know that. I identify that. I vibe with that. I got you, bro. I'll be your dead weight chain nigger. Yeah, I got you. Some other white guy come up and call me nigger. And I know for him, all that means is the one who he has to fucking chase out of all of his daughter's pussies. And you know, I'm sorry, man. I'm probably not that nigger. But, yeah. I feel like I'm in a very envious position, because I'm obviously half black, so I can explore humor, and I can sort of get purposely put people who are trying to be hurtful and racist, kind of like I can put them like, you just like throw them for a loop. They're just like, wait a minute, what? Is this black guy joining in on my racist interpretation of him? Is he piling on with me? Is this not bother him? Is he like it? Oh my god, I think every time I belittle him for his race, it's like petting a dog. It's like, oh yeah. He loves it. What the fuck? And see, I'm also in the position where I'm also pretty light-skinned, even though I am literally half black and I came out of black pussy, which I've had other mixed kids, other half black kids at my school argue me that, you know, even though they're darker than me and we have the same amount, 50-50 black, because I came out of a black vagina, that makes me more black. I don't buy it, but whatever. But I'm light-skinned enough, and obviously I have a pretty white guy personality that I can really irk some black people if I wanted to. And I don't even really have to try hard at all. They just don't trust me. And then when they don't trust me, I'd be like, yeah, dude, who wouldn't? I understand. It's natural for you to not trust a nigger. And then they're just like, oh, ah.
Oh, he did it again. He did it again.
Whew. But, yeah. In case, like, it's not already, you know, been reiterated time and time again, I have nothing against black people. I have nothing against people, really. I just, there's certain stuff, you know, growing up in the area that I grew up in, there's just certain stuff that, that was gonna be the focal point of people trying to bully me and, manipulate me and, devalue me. And the way that they go about doing that is usually race. So, me being slimy and very intuitive, learned quickly to turn that back around. And not only did I turn that back around, I was lucky enough to where it didn't become a job, a chore, you know. It didn't become an effort for me to turn it back around on them every time. Like, oh God, I gotta try and turn this back around. Oh shit, oh shit, whew, that was close. Oh man, that was hard. No, that's not how it is. I'm lucky enough to where I turn it around even when I'm not trying to turn it around. I make it so they have to turn it around on me because I'm just incessant and compulsive with it. And, you know, it's a blessing and a curse. It's a blessing and a curse. It's like a dog chasing their tail and they finally find it and just literally rip that shit off. Yeah.
Soldier boy, business hoe. Watch me crank it, watch me route. Watch me crank it, soldier boy. That's Superman. That how?
It's 9 o'clock on a Saturday. Gotta try and get some sin. Jerk off in the corner of the house and stick to the walls and grin. Did one of those fucking, like, compulsive buy sprees, but I ended up ending it quick enough when I was at Guitar Center last. Like, I had to go get strings for my axe, finally got that up and running again, and fucking, yeah, I was trying to check out, but then, like, my eyes kept glancing around the room, and then, no, harmonicas, shit, now I have 5-pack of harmonicas. And then it wasn't over because the guy at the register was taking his time ringing me up. And in that time, my eyes did another little glancy glance. And this time, if you can believe it, they glanced upon this, baby. Yeah, one of these little recorder things. I just needed some bullshit instruments, you know, for when I don't have the fucking focus to play my actual instruments that stimulate my creativity. But really, I like the harmonica. I really do. Like, I could walk around with that all day and just fucking and just slay that shit. You know what I'm saying? Just blowing on those reeds like it's a fucking line of black cocks. So, I've been noticing it seems like everybody on social media and just seems like a lot of people these days, especially like my generation and earlier, just all generations, it seems like Americans and are having a lot of fun getting offended at stuff and like just being offended, and that's like, I feel like it's a hobby now for some people, like it's an effort and like a it's like a diversion, like a purposeful activity for them to remain in a state of being offended by stuff. And like, if a moment happens where it's just like everything is sort of just satisfactory in the way that it needs to be for them to be all right, they're just like, oh no, cannot again not accept this moment of stillness and acceptance, must arbitrarily define some sort of parameter to become offended by. The number of dust particles that I inhaled for that last breath was odd. Everyone knows every breath must have an even number of dust particles. So, in lieu of everyone seeming to have so much fun with the whole getting offended stuff, I am open and taking suggestions for things I could be offended by. So, yeah, just throw them all out there, you know. I've been trying to get myself in the state to be offended and trying to, you know, be a little more petty, and it's hard, you know. My potent and honed indifference to most things in the world and just kind of lack of interest in, and you know, my natural state of devoid enthusiasm makes it pretty hard for me to, you know, pretty hard for me to get the ball rolling with the whole getting and staying offended. I feel like a failure compared to the rest of my peers. Yep. My scrotum. My scrotum. Oh yeah, oh, my testes up. My testes up. Gotta take a look at these balls, scrotum. In case you didn't know, the Pokemon theme song and Amazing Grace, you can switch the rhythm. They have the same prose. Is that what it's called? Prose? The flow and the amount of syllables of words? Yeah.
Amazing Grace, how sweet the sound, who saved a wretch like me.
Or the other way, you know.
I wanna be the very best, like no one ever was. To catch them is my real test. To train them is my course.
Yeah, you get the idea. So if anyone finds any more songs that have interchangeable melodies like that, let me know. I really find a lot of interest in that kind of thing. So cool.
Sickle guy. Fickle. That's the stickle film. Fickle. Just like HPV. So cool. Get me that on my lips.
But also, I know that not that many people listen to this podcast, but on the off chance one of the people that listens to this podcast is a tattoo artist, hit me up. Hit the digits. I need tattoos. But, All right, my fellow shells of people, my fellow, empty shells where once a joyful and animated spirit once resided, peers such as myself, I bid you all guys a good night and a happy Valentine's Day. I hope Cupid shoots you with his arrow of love and it hits you right in the head of your cock or right on the fucking, you know, sensitive edge of your labia and causes permanent damage to you. So good night. I bid if I do. I see the babu. Yes. That was the outro. Good evening. Goodbye.